And you gonna murder this one and murder that one. Talking all that bullshit. I'm gonna put it to you like this, yo.
This is for the nerds. This is for the brainiacs. This is what we deserve. Go ahead and play it back. You ain't gonna touch me. You're not gonna do nothing. You are not above me. I bet you wish you was me. I know it, I know.
What is poppin', everybody? And welcome back to another special episode of the Only Friends Podcast. Well, you know, it's me and my only friends, which includes, but is not limited to, my boy Guapito. What's poppin', Guaps? How you feeling, baby?
Dustin Poirier, plus 135. Gilbert Burns, plus 185. I didn't get a chance to say anything. I think I might have put the Gilbert Burns pick in there.
He lost, right?
Yeah, but if you watch the fight, it was a great pick.
Dustin, I lost the bet, but well, you know,
if you watch the fight, like he was winning the fight going into the third round. Yeah. So I mean, if I could take that bet,
you lost the hand, but you played it well. I understand.
Oh, there you go, perfect analogy. Thank you, Tortoise. How did your session at the win go?
It did not go well. It's fine. Lost, $450 or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, that's all right. Move on to the next one.
How do you like the win?
I like the win. The win is nice, you know. It's very nice and clean. Mm. Doesn't smell like smoke.
Right. How are the hot dogs there?
I don't know. There are no hot dogs. No. That's the drawback.
Yeah, that's the drawback.
And they got Kobe burgers there.
Yeah. From what I noticed, the action might be a little better at the Jewel. I mean, small sample size. But you know, my table today was all right. It was good for a little bit, and then.
You're effectively saying that your win rate is higher at the Jewel.
I mean, it's hard to say. It's really hard to say.
How many hours did you put into the Jewel?
I don't know, 500-ish. Well, at which steak?
I don't care.
All steaks?
Yeah, all steaks.
Maybe 500-ish.
Okay. Mm-hmm. A lot of hours.
Yeah.
What was your hourly, give or take? Just in big blinds. You had to guess.
Probably like 8 or 9, maybe.
Okay. All right. So that's the goal now. We got to see if we can do better at the win. Mm-hmm. Deeper game, Brian. Deeper game.
No, it's not as deep. It's deeper at the Jewel.
Not as deep.
Yeah. The Jewel is 600 buy-in. At the win, it's 500.
He's playing 1-3 at the win and 2-3 at the Jewel.
Well, 1-3 smaller, technically.
I mean, kind of. Big blind's the same.
When are you going to get in the 2-5 streets?
Soon.
1500 is bigger than whatever. Soon. What's the Jewel fifth?
You can't take the training.
Jewel's also 1500.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Okay. Hey, maybe the Jewel really. What's the rake? That's what really matters.
Where?
Both.
7 and 5.
It's whoa. 5. No, the other one's 5 plus 2, and the other one's 5.
7 and 5.
You say plus two as though it's like an option.
He swears he's getting this money back. He's like, I'm up on the rake back.
I'm way up on the rake. Like, obviously, I've run above expectation when it comes to promos, but I am way up.
He's flopped 2 hot cards. Yeah. Shit is popping around there, man.
He handed me $1,000 last month.
Right. So, it's $7 at the Jewel?
7, yeah.
That's 5 at the win.
Yeah.
I think that's your answer.
I mean, but it's not. It's like it. The two is like is neutral EV.
He's realistically only playing like paying $4 rake.
It's zero EV
because he's making so much on the hot cards too.
Mm. Yeah,
yeah. So he's getting back to 2 plus another dollar.
I see.
But and, you know, it's nice to get that extra $2 when the pot gets raked to you every time. That's nice.
It's painful, you know, when it's not, and you play a lot of hands. I'll tell you that.
You don't have to rely on hitting the hot card to, you know, to get that money back.
There's no more pain than fucking playing a bunch of hands. It's and all the an extra $2
listen,
coming out every
listen,
hand.
It literally is all the same. I think. If I played like, yeah, if I played there or played anywhere, like obviously if the buy-in's different, then it's going to be a little different. But I think my win rate at the Jewel and my win rate at the win would be very, very similar. And those specific stakes.
Okay. Mark, when you were moving up through the stakes, were you keeping track of how much you were making? This is a stupid question, but...
I kept track... So, this is actually a better question for Brian. He was allergic to keeping records back in the day.
What?
Don't what me. what's your spreadsheet look like from 2003 to like 2012?
Spreadsheet. I did everything on hand, paper, pen and paper, baby.
He's on record as saying I don't.
I'm the first one that started keeping records. Okay.
I don't like writing down losses. He was allergic to it.
What are you talking about? You're just making shit up.
Am I?
Yeah. I never said I don't like writing down. Nobody likes writing down losses. Who likes it? But I still did it.
Okay. I kept a spreadsheet. I still have it, actually. Maybe I'll pull it up one of these days. I have to go searching through my old drive to find it. But I kept copious records, just not detailed ones. So I kept session by session. But not hours, not
BBs per.
No, bro, that stuff didn't exist in 2005. Right.
Burke, you said this argument with Dan O'Brien about what was more important, your win rate per session or your win rate per hour. Burke, he's on the side of session.
No, I would say hourly.
Go on.
I don't know. It just makes more sense to me.
Why?
Because I want to know what I'm making an hour.
Okay, so this was my counter argument to Dan. Obviously, like. He's theoretically right, but the problem is, as much like anything else in theory, you're assuming something like one of the variables to be fixed. And my counter argument was, like, basically he would say, when is it ever better to keep statistics and not have more information? And that's a valid point. Like, mm-hmm. if you're looking at statistical analysis, you'd like as much information on the data sample as possible. But my counter was that session by session, the actual table dynamics or the people that you're playing with vary so widely that it's a better
metric.
It's a better metric to measure if you're keeping like notes of the people that you're playing with, right? So if I just have like a 2-5 session where I put drunk guy in the notes and I happen to have an outlier win of like 5K, well, I'm pretty sure I can attribute a lot of that to the drunk guy. Mm-hmm. And his point is, over a large sample, all that stuff comes out in the wash.
That's what I was going to say.
But if it comes out in the wash, then you don't really learn anything, right? Like, because you're playing live, there is no wash. there's no large sample. Like,
yeah, but you can do both, right?
Of course you can do both. My argument is basically that like hourly means nothing live. And I still stand by that, because by the time you get to 10,000 hours, the first 3,000 hours you played are completely meaningless. Maybe the first 5,000, right? Because the player pool has turned over so rapidly. Not even rapidly, but like the churn has just been so clear. 10,000 hours is going to take you like, call it 5 years, right?
If you're really grinding.
Yeah, that's if you're putting in 2,000 hours a year.
A lot.
So year 5 player pool compared to year 1 player pool is going to be wildly different. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, then my overall hourly isn't going to be very... like. What I'm currently expected to make when I go sit down isn't going to be very reflective of the current landscape of the game. So I don't know. I mean, it's just like the true answer is that they're all shitty metrics because live is so slow. But Dan's argument stands. Like,
yeah.
Having more details is obviously going to be better.
Mm-hmm. Last question when it comes to not hourly, but I would assume that at 1-3, 2-5, and maybe going into 5-10, staying at like 10 BBs per... hour
mm-hmm.
seems sustainable, but I feel like at 10 NL, 25, 25, 50, that's when it starts to get tough. And then after those stakes, when you start playing whales, that's when you can start getting above 10 again.
I mean, there are whales at every stake, to be honest.
I just assume that 5, 10 and 10, 25 were probably the toughest stakes to like get out of, meaning moving up.
Now, yeah, for sure. If you're not like, I mean, if you have to play like public games in Vegas at the 5, 10, 10, 20 level, like, you're playing some pretty stiff competition, but like, if you're the best player in the pool, you're making 10 blinds an hour for sure.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, yeah, making $200 an hour at
5-10.
At like, no.
No, five, like you'd be destroying
10-20. 10-20, sorry.
Yeah, because like, it's uncapped. So if you're truly the best player in the pool, it's not that unheard of. I mean, my win rate over my last like 2,000 hours at 100 plus is probably unsustainable, but like, it's not. Live win rates are high. I'll just leave it at that.
I think
live win rates are very, yeah, very high.
It's funny because like, if you look at from like 1-2 all the way up to like 10-20, say specifically in Vegas live.
Yeah.
I think probably 2-5 is where you're going to make the most big blinds per hunt or big blinds per hour.
Yeah, it's the deepest and
it's the deepest
for the softest pool.
And it, yeah,
and it's still a soft pool because there's still a lot of recreational and people.
The rake, yeah. The rake is not impacted that much, right? So like, if you play 1-2, yeah, sure, like it's very very soft, but the rake just eats you up. Right.
So if that
even
stands
in the,
to,
even
that,
in the 1-3,
if that stands to be true, I would say then most people getting into playing live should probably start at 2-5 then.
Well,
I mean, it just depends. Like, you know, you can
depends on yeah.
You can jump off at 1-3, 1-2 if you only have 5 or 10K to start with. Like, it all depends on like what your nest egg is, mm-hmm. what your ability to replenish is, things of that sort. But yeah, I mean, the faster you can get to 2-5, like 2-5 is the first sustainable stake I think that you can play. I don't think people can sustain 1-3, 1-2 for a living for any meaningful amount of time.
I think it'd be tough
if you're not living in a basement under your mom's house. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, even
yeah.
if you are, like, at some point, you're just gonna hit your ceiling at whatever it is that you can earn at those stakes, and it's never gonna be enough to live on. That's
right.
That's
you're almost like
capped
out at like 30 an hour.
Yeah, like right? if you like really crushed it mm-hmm. and you made, you know, call it 30 an hour, even 40 an hour, if you're like a ridiculous best player in the pool and you're grinding hard, I mean, what are you gonna make here? 50K. You know,
yeah.
So like,
I'm making like 30 an hour, like from started like this year on.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, you know, you might if you like put in a sick grind, you might be able to make like 45K. Because the thing is, like, the closer to 2,000 hours a year you get, the more that win rate's going to regress,
mm-hmm.
as it just has to. So it's like, yeah, if you make like 45K at 1-3, you can sustain yourself for a short period of time, a year, maybe 2 years, whatever. But you'll never be able to save enough to go up to the next level, right? If you started with a 15K bankroll and you make your ceiling of 45K a year, or call it 3 years in a row, it's damn near impossible to live off of less than 30.
Right. You got a car payment, you got rent, you got food,
and
you
it's
got expenses.
Probably emergencies. Pushing closer to 40. So like, maybe you're able to retain 5K a year. So that means after 3 years, you like double your bankroll to 30. Which is good enough to get you to 2-5, but like mm-hmm. you're not that far from moving back down to 1-3.
What if you go on like a 1 or 2 month downswing?
Exactly,
or something
that's what
like
I mean.
That, boom, you're just
like, you're a 10K downswing away from mm-hmm. moving back down to 1-3.
Yeah.
Oof.
Which would be fucking, imagine grinding for three years straight just to get to the point of being sustained at
or
the
just
next
have,
stake.
Yeah, just have shitty 2 months and then be like, wow, 3 years of work, 2 months yeah. gone. Yeah.
Yeah, and then having to like pick yourself up by the bootstraps and try to do it all over again. Like,
and not let it affect you, yeah.
It's fucking hard, man. Poker is a fascinating world. The weird thing is like there's so much free money out there, but I think we conflate the amount, or I think we conflate the easy money with endless money, right? Like there's free money out there to be made.
Mm-hmm.
Just like there's free money to be made if you're looking to earn minimum wage very easily. Right, like you can mow lawns. That's free money. You can set up a fucking lemonade stand. Like that's free money. You don't
poop
have
scoop.
To put it. Yeah, you can go scoop poop out of people's backyards. It's free money. You don't have to do that much. The amount of effort necessary
it's not
to get
free
that
free money. You're just labor.
It is. Yeah, but it is compared to the labor in versus the money out. Right. Like there's a lot of things that you can, especially in the digital world, like called a graphic designer, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
You can make mid tier graphic design. You can do like mid tier graphic design work where takes you 10 to 15 minutes per image.
Yeah, but you have to have that skill set.
Sure, but like, you know, you can watch a YouTube video and develop it. Like, it's not that hard to, it's not a unique skill set that like...
Brian, if I can do it.
I mean, the thing is like anything that you could train AI to do in its current form isn't going to be such a top tier skill set that like people can't teach themselves to do it. You know what I mean? So it's like if you can develop that skill set and now you can spend 10 to 15 minutes on an image that you you charge $25 to $50 for. Well, you just made $100 an hour, right? Mm-hmm. It's a ridiculous return for not much work.
Right.
So there's a ton of free money out there. It's just we forget that free money comes with a very low ceiling. Like there's not an endless supply of free money.
Right.
The reason why it's free is because it's tedious and it requires enough time that people are willing to pay a premium to get it off their fucking plate.
Yeah.
Right? And it's the same thing with like 1-3-2-5. Even maybe to some degree, like soft online sites at the micro stakes or clubs, whatever. There's a fuck ton of free money out there, but it comes at the cost of rake and variance, which immediately eats up a lot of your win rate if you're good. And that's problematic. You know, it's like you fall into the allure of like, these games are so soft, I'm making so much money in theory. It's like, well, hold on a second. Like, let's actually calculate this out and see like how much the rake over the long run is going to eat you alive. How much variance is going, like, no matter how soft it is, imagine that you just run into, you know, bottom third of the deck for a 2 month stretch, something along those lines, right?
It's going to be pain.
It's not just pain. It reminds you very quickly that the free money is limited, yeah, right? And you're much better fighting for contested money, where a lot of these variables that are keeping you poor kind of disappear. And that's not just poker. That's the real world too, right? Like, when you're talking about entry-level positions versus middle management versus upper management, the money becomes a lot freer again when you get to the upper management level, because there's the allure of having irreplicable skills. And it's kind of the same thing in poker. You know, you make the high stakes realm, people, there's some, whether it's soft skills or direct poker ability, there's a belief of these unique skill sets that these players hold that are not being rewarded with a very high hourly, and the money becomes very free again. But it's a very steep bell curve that you have to climb and fall before you're able to arrive at the other side. And most people just aren't going to be able to power through all of the things that keep you poor, right? Mm-hmm. And again, like, that's not just poker. That's just about any career path you choose. It's hard to be the top 10% of whatever field it is that you try to get into, especially when the vast majority of fields, it's not directly measured in like metrics. There aren't a lot of career choices out there where like there's a direct correlation between your metrics, your output, and your rankings, right? Plenty of them just, the more efficient you are, the more sought after you are to hit a certain level. Like, software engineering is a great example. You know what I mean? Like, if you're the best coder in the world, you don't run companies. You oversee teams of coders.
Yeah, you just get to a point of delegating.
Yeah. Yeah. You do all the hardest code, and then you delegate all of the grunt work out to people who are beneath you, and you get paid handsomely for it, but you don't get paid what the CEO, who doesn't know how to fucking code a lick,
right,
is getting paid for finding you and hiring you.
Yeah.
There's definitely something to be said for understanding the inner workings of how these systems are created, and that they're not a pure meritocracy. So happy Friday, everyone.
Happy Friday. Friday. What a Friday it's been for the world of Pittsburgh sports. You guys thought we were not going to talk about this. Are you crazy?
Bye, Mom.
Bye, Kenny. You know, I didn't feel a lot. You know, I love Kenny, but then, you know, he went bye-bye, and I was like, eh.
I got a lot to say.
Which made me think maybe deep down I didn't really believe in him at all the whole time.
I got a lot to say about 8. Salute to you, 8.
he's closer to home now.
He is closer to where he grew up. An Eagles fan. I'm happy for
him. Yeah, he grew up in New Jersey.
Yeah, I got a lot to say. I'm going to save it for the end of the show. I'm going to take a beat on Kenny Pickett. But I was very sad to see this. I'm just, you know,
you wanted to see it work out.
It was all out. It was so good that today I looked out at my phone. I said, holy shit. I turned around. I'm like, yo, Burke. Pickett, no more. He's like, what are you, fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, I didn't believe him because I didn't think there would be any way we would only be carrying one fucking quarterback.
He's no longer.
We'll have Justin Fields by tomorrow, so it's fine.
I don't think that's
a good thing. He's going to the Patriots, I think.
Is he really?
Yeah, they're just going to.
We're going to get like fucking Zach Wilson.
Yeah.
Which would be, imagine just getting the two quarterbacks in the world that I hate the most.
We spent a whole. What, you have a problem with the last name Wilson?
It's true.
All those Mr. Wilsons out there.
Who else do I dislike that's Wilson?
Russell Wilson.
Oh, God.
Dummy. You guys think they're going to wear the same jersey?
If they both just get Wilson 3?
Yeah. When Russell gets hurt, just, hey, take off the jersey, man.
Honestly, I'm fine with it. Like, we spent the entire first year of this podcast memeing on Russ Wilson. Like, let him fucking
play.
He's so fucking cringe. But now... Now I'm forced, like...
Now he's a Steeler, you have to like him.
At least before I could have been like, you know, 1 foot out on him and just been like, nah, Kenny's just waiting in the wings. Like, he's going to take this competition seriously. He's going to fucking grind his dick off. Because you know what? Everything about Kenny Pickett screams grit. That's why Yinzers fell in love with him. He wasn't going to be the next version of Bubby fucking Brister. No, he was going to be the next version of Big Ben, just a little bit smaller and a little bit more athletic.
Way less of an arm.
Less of an arm, better legs. Just
all around less talented.
But grit, just fucking grit. I mean, this guy was a Heisman candidate his fifth year in Pitt. Now, granted, he had one of the best receiving corps in the fucking nation, mm-hmm. but that's neither here nor there. God, how sad am I now that we didn't go after, was it Addison last year?
He's on Minnesota?
No. The wideout from Pitt.
Sorry.
Yeah, he's on Minnesota.
Yeah, yeah. Him and JJ, Jesus Christ. Imagine him and Pickens, rather. Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I really don't know what to think because the order of events here is very confusing to me. If it all had happened backwards, I think it would all make so much more sense. Mm-hmm. But because it happened the way that it did, I feel like the front office is like kind of fuck me scrambling right now.
Well, yeah, they are. They got rid of Rudolph thinking they had Pickett in the backup.
I'm okay with that.
Maybe Pickett, second. You know, Pickett wasn't the guy who we thought he was. Looks like he had, well, not just like in like talent wise, but like, you know,
he doesn't have the heart.
Doesn't have the heart in the locker room. Like, it sounded like, you know, like once they hired Russ, he was kind of like, didn't want to be a team player. And the same thing happened, you know, there was rumors the same thing happened when Mason took over. And, you know, he was causing a big, you know, scuffle about not coming back as a starter.
He said he wouldn't be his backup.
He wouldn't be his backup. And, you know, so, I mean, maybe it's good. Maybe we don't want a person like that on our team.
The rumor floating around was that he wouldn't dress for week 17 in Seattle mm-hmm. to be the emergency quarterback.
Yeah.
So it wasn't about being a backup. He was a backup week 18 and in the playoffs. But
yeah, well, I mean, the media came down pretty hard on him, so.
Yeah.
You know, who's to say if he changed his tune or whatever, but.
Yeah, it's a good way to get blackballed from the rest of the league, especially when you're a bum. Well, bye, Kenny!
The thing is that their quarterback room has been a fucking mess. Trubisky was a very failed experiment.
Yeah.
And, you know, history does not reflect great on the Steelers in one specific position. They've been elite at the linebacker position. Mm-hmm. They've been elite at the defensive line position. They've had elite offensive lines throughout the year. Elite running backs dating back to...
Jerome Bettis.
Well, yeah, I mean, going all the way back to Franco,
yeah.
Followed by the bus, who was a big mm-hmm. draft day move for them to acquire him from the Rams. Yeah. Prior to him, it was Barry Foster and Bam Bam Morris.
Yep.
Big power backs, you know, just always... They made a lot out of nothing. They're kind of like the Chiefs now. Throughout that time frame, where it was just like, look, they have an identity, and you can plug and play certain levels of talent.
It felt like no matter what new linebacker came in, no matter what new running back came in, they were just always going to be really good.
Always can plug and play. Safeties.
Imagine calling fucking Patrick Mahomes nothing, making a lot out of nothing. He's like the
best.
Are
you listening to a word I'm saying?
Yeah,
I was talking about the running backs for the Steelers.
Well, you were talking about the team, kind of. They were able to make a lot out of nothing.
No, Conrad. Okay. I was talking about the Steelers having plug and play at the running back position throughout all those years. The fuck are you bringing up Patrick Mahomes for?
Well, Isaiah Pacheco.
I know how good Patrick Mahomes is.
Hold on, what about Isaiah Pacheco?
I bet him against... That's what I said. Pacheco, look, you can go all the way down the lineage of Kansas City running backs. They're only good when they're there. They're system guys. Like, you know, Kareem Hunt, I guess, was like okay for the Browns for a while, but he was a third down back mostly. He was elite for the Chiefs. And they always seem to find that guy. Even the year before Pacheco came, they had, I can't even remember what his fucking name is now. He's dead. They literally passed away. They moved on from him. I want to say it started with an H, but I can't remember. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Point is, certain positions and most skill positions, the Steelers were always super deep. Wide receiver core, like mm-hmm. all throughout the years. They always had guys who were like fringe. You don't want to go so far as to say Hall of Famers, but like guys like Hines Ward, who would just like always right there. On the fringe of being elite. And then you had the quarterback position. And man, they just never figured it the fuck out. It's like...
Except for Ben.
Well, that's the thing. It's like...
He got lucky with Ben.
It was like
20 years.
They moved up to get him.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, quarterback position for them was very similar to the coaching position. Like they... When they get talent, they're able to ride it out through a dynasty. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, they had Noel, they had Kyler, and they had Tomlin. And throughout all of that, they ride or died on finding a game manager quarterback who was beyond a game manager, like not Trent Dilfer, but talented enough to actually get out there and make plays. And you're right. Like, it was Terry Bradshaw and then a bunch of fucking bums that you could steal in the seventh round.
Yeah. And then, and then Ben.
Yeah. And the only
and now, like, are we going to go through a generation of bums again?
Well, not necessarily. I don't think we can, because the league is so different. Like, you just can't, you can't ignore the quarterback position.
I mean, say that to the Browns.
But their whole franchise has been notoriously awful at everything.
But the thing
they've drafted 32 quarterbacks. You can't miss that often.
How about the Jets? Right? Like there's a lot of teams that have tried and tried and tried to get that franchise quarterback and just can't. There's just not enough of them.
What are you talking about? Mark Sanchez is a GOAT.
That's true. Yeah. See the butt fumble guy?
Yes.
Yeah. Or was that Romo?
No, it was definitely Sanchez.
Romo?
Yeah. Romo did something.
Romo had a stupid fumble in the end zone also, but it wasn't the butt fumble.
Right. But, like, you know, it's very, very difficult to get a franchise quarterback, one that can win you a Super Bowl and that could last for years. And
I think you're holding them to the Brady Mahomes standard.
I think
you guys actually have a Super Bowl quarterback right now. I think Russell Wilson brings you guys close to the Super Bowl next year.
I think Russell Wilson 5 years ago, for sure. I wholeheartedly agree.
Nah, Russell Wilson actually played decent last year.
He did. Like, I mean, sure, he still has talent. And
he played really fucking good, and he doesn't have to do much in Pittsburgh.
There are not a lot of 36-year-old quarterbacks going to the Super Bowl.
He doesn't have to do anything in Pittsburgh. He's like, if he was on Pittsburgh this year, they go to the Super Bowl, or they go close to the Super Bowl.
How old is Tom Brady?
One or two playoff white games.
I mean, Tom Brady's 44 or whatever. Yeah, he's retired, but he's you know, an anomaly.
All Russell has to do is be
prior
smart.
To Tom Brady. I think the last quarterback over 35 was probably Peyton, who won the Super Bowl in his final season. And then prior to Peyton, I don't know how old was Dilfer when he won it for the fucking Ravens.
He might have been on his way out. 36, I feel like.
Right, but like most of the league is driven by young talent. And I don't think that they can continue to miss, because, look, the reason why the Browns and the Jets are notoriously awful is because they don't draft well. So it's like, you say that, like, you know, all these teams have, like, missed on finding franchise quarterbacks, but there have been franchise quarterbacks that have come out of the drafts that they just flat out missed on.
The only position that the Jets actually do miss on is fucking quarterback. They hit everything else perfectly. Like, they always have draft great cornerbacks, defensive line, wide receiver. Yeah. They cannot fucking get a quarterback for the life of them.
I will say they've always been very strong at the cornerback position.
Yeah, Revis.
Revis Island, baby. Another
Gardner now.
Another Pitt star.
There was somebody in between there, I feel like. I forgot.
But yeah, so like, I think that at some point, look, they draft really well and they have an identity and they always... Like, they've never moved off of it. In 50 years, the Steelers are exactly what you think they're going to be. They're a smash mouth team. It's going to play defense. They're always going to be a little bit weak in the secondary, and they're always going to be a little bit weak when it comes to talent at the quarterback position, but they're going to make up for it in a myriad of other ways. Now, they're kind of in a position where this is my concern. Like, you're all in on Russ, but they have to draft incredibly responsibly in certain skill positions that before they were kind of able to take flyers on and have it work out, which is specifically the wide receiver position. If we look over the last 5 years, something about that system allowed them to draft guys that turned out to be bums elsewhere. Guys like Juju, amazing rookie year with Ben. Incredible, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, Ben gets hurt the following year and then retires. He ends up being a nobody journeyman. I think he's going on his fourth team now. Who knows where the fuck he's at, right?
Didn't he play for KC last year?
No, he went to New
England. Played for Kansas City year before, and then he went to New England.
Now I don't know where the fuck he's at. He might be in New England again. I don't know. With him was, you know, what's his face that went to the Bears?
Claypool.
Claypool, yeah. Again, amazing rookie year with Ben. Like, you give him some arm talent.
I wouldn't say amazing rookie year.
He had a pretty big year. I think he had like nine touchdowns, if I'm not mistaken.
He had 4-1 game, I think.
He had a couple big games.
Yeah.
He was a big receiver that you know Ben could look for in the end zone. These types of guys, though, like, you know, they had the capability to help a quarterback, especially one that was that was like well established like Ben. But now all of a sudden we only have Pickens, right? So
Pip is
she's sleepy.
She's falling asleep.
So we have one wide out. We have elite tight ends. that don't get thrown to by Russell Wilson because he doesn't throw over the middle. And we have a great running game. So it's like, yeah, we're asking him not to do much, but now they have to draft at the wideout position. They still have to retool the offensive line. We're getting old at the defensive line. We still need
you know what, Bert,
secondary.
They have the whole offseason to think about it. It's baseball season. And I don't have a lot to say on the Pirates, but the only thing I have to say is they're going to compete for the division and probably make the playoffs.
I actually agree.
Yeah.
I have a bet with...
Division is trash. Division is trash. The Pirates are talented, man. They got a lot of good talent.
I agree.
Young talent.
It's very reminiscent of like 2013.
Michael A. Taylor, who's now going to, he's a gold glove center fielder, which just makes our whole outfield better. It rounds out our lineup.
Do you think they have a better record than the Reds?
I have a 1K bet saying they will.
Ooh. Yeah.
Man, the Reds are good.
Shout out to my man TJ Friedel.
Maybe it's going to be the.
I think they're going to be the two top teams in the division.
Yeah, I think it might come down to them. We'll see. Cardinals will be there.
Cardinals and who? Who's your other team? Brewers. Brewers are going to be good too.
No. Brewers.
No.
Weren't they? Brewers are good last year.
Yeah,
they
kind of.
What's wrong with you?
I mean,
guys?
They won the division, but like the division was kind of trash last year.
They have Christian Yelich. No, they don't. Yelich's gone.
He's old.
Maybe. Yeah.
Who's their fucking star in Brewers?
Ryan Braun.
No, come on.
Who is it? Driving me nuts. I'm going to go crazy.
Nobody.
They have anybody?
Nobody. They stink.
Yeah.
It just stinks up in the chat. Absolutely atrocious. All right, let's have a little fun with this one. I found this to be an interesting thread, to say the least. There was a hand that came up on the bubble of the 100K main event in Jeju for the Triton series. And poor Rasty, man, he put dankness in his lane. So
he is losing two though, or hands like eights, nines, and tens, maybe even jacks. Like,
yeah, but
probably like none of those hands three bet.
Jacks might three bet.
No, probably not.
The overpairs, certainly queens plus, I think, would always three bet.
I actually think queens is close. Probably mix. I'm being serious.
Yeah, but
no. But jacks is like 100% flatting here. Will, look up your ICM.
But the question
look
is,
up your
ICM
three betting ranges in these spots.
So Jax is flatting, but is Jax betting 400 and then shoving the
this
river?
This is why I'm in the booth.
Fair enough.
And I'm not waffling on this one because there are ones that I'm like, I'm not sure. But this is like tens and Jax are not three betting. All right. What he is.
All right.
You got it.
All right.
You dig?
Oh man, you hate it. It's a look away moment. When it happens in real time, you know, you hate to see it. It's awkward. It's like seeing your first boob as a
kid.
Talk
about a tough conversation.
Yeah. I think Will just had a tough convo off air there with old Rasty. But these spots are difficult, man, because I think, and you know, like this is a different conversation, but I think it's one worth having at least very briefly. We've talked a lot about commentary and like what we personally enjoy, who we think is good, and what it can contribute to a stream. I think in these Triton streams specifically, where you're watching the elite of the elite compete for large sums of money, mm-hmm. I think that this is a very specific product that doesn't compare to anything else you see on the regular, right? Like this is not...
The Jewel Free Roll is pretty up there.
Oh yeah, they stream that now?
They should.
Okay. This is not the World Series main event coverage where you're trying to keep the layperson engaged. This is not Hustler Live where there's a bunch of monkeys throwing poo at one another. This is not even your typical Poker Go stream, which, you know, when it's the cash streams, it tends to be more of a fun environment. No gamble, no future, high stakes poker. Not that we don't love to have Ali and Nick on those streams, but you know, Hanks and Platt do a fantastic job. They hit that nice little middle point where they're both speaking to the lay person in the audience, as well as like the diehards that are interested in the poker taking place. More importantly, they just highlight like the absurdity of it all, like the large sums of money going in, the amplified action whenever something wild happens, when a cooler occurs. Triton is very different. Right, Triton is the creme de la creme. It's the peak. It's what every single person who plays tournaments that wants to be elite at this game is aspiring to. This is the major leagues. This is our version of Sunday Night Football or the game of the week for the MLB. So the commentary has to reflect that. And I think we've come to expect a very specific standard out of them, mainly with Ali and Henry holding down the play-by-play throughout the years, right? Now, Henry's recently stepped down to become a businessman and a recreational tournament player. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Henry. He did hop in the booth for a couple spells here throughout this Triton event. And I have to tell you, I know that I may not be in the majority here because everybody has their own favorites, but Henry genuinely is one of my favorite commentators of all time. And I'm not just saying that because he's my friend. Like, yeah. I think he is.
Or because he has that beautiful British accent.
No, that it is certainly part.
Take a day off me.
Oh, behave.
The accent is certainly a big part of it, but he is also just tremendous at navigating the play-by-play while letting it breathe enough for the analysts. Now, look, Will got thrown into a fucking tough spot. My guy was making tough convos on the internet 6 months ago for LOLs, and now all of a sudden he's doing play-by-play for the best fucking players in the world. And I don't think Will's going to be all that shy about saying that, you know, fucking Buckalaw Joe from Poughkeepsie probably doesn't got the same chops when it comes to understanding how No Limit Hold'em plays out in bubble spots as Brian Rast. So
I think Pip wants to say something.
Pip's here. She's out here in the streets. How you doing, girl? So when a situation like this comes up, it's obviously difficult, but they've been there. How long has Triton been running now?
Ooh.
You've been at it every day, Guap. What is this, like day 14, day 15? Maybe more?
I know the series is going to be like 17 days, which is a little bit more than what they've been doing. It's been like 12 or 13 days, but now they're doing 17.
Okay,
and it sounds like the numbers are getting much bigger.
They're crushing. I mean, a lot of like the American guys who may have been a little too intimidated to play have started making their ways over. And I think that's really increasing the field. But anyway, my point is like Will showed up very green, wet behind the ears, but he's getting some reps in now, right? And he's worked with just about everybody at this point. And, you know, DePaulo made a comment where he said, like, hey, like, Rast was a bit crass here. He was a little mean to my guy. Like, if this were Shulman, he would have went about it in a way where he's like, well, that's interesting, Will, but, you know, perhaps because of the bubble, what we would see here is something a little bit more passive by the overpairs. Perhaps jacks, I don't know, maybe queens is where it stops. For sure, kings will get the three. You know, and he would gently correct my man.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel for Rast because that's my style, man. Like, let Rast get on the mic 5 days a week and host the Only Friends podcast. He'll get the same. You'll have Nick Vertucci coming out of the woodwork going, this guy's so fucking dogmatic with his Bitcoin takes and his ICM, and he just has a bunch of jackals behind him doubling down on every take. It's like, well, when you put the fucking time in to be confident enough in something to say it to thousands of people, which is what's happening here. Like, Rast is sticking his neck out saying, like, absolutely not. Jax is 100% a flat here.
Not wavering.
Right. And I get why he's so dug in this moment, because for him, first of all, Rast doesn't do a lot of commentary either. So it's not like he's a seasoned vet who has like thousands of hours under his belt.
He does all the Tritons though, right? Like the last couple of years, I think.
Off and on. I mean, he's playing a lot of them too, right? But I think that there was a stint where he didn't do any, right? Maybe for about a year or so.
Middle part, yeah.
Yeah. So it's not like he has thousands of hours of commentary under his belt. But by the way, for what it's worth, I think Rast is also one of the best analysts out there. Like, he doesn't necessarily have, call it what's the word I'm looking for? Like the charisma, I guess, of Shulman. But his analysis is top.
Yeah.
Like, just top. Guy doesn't fucking miss. So, like, I get it. Like, when you're in that position and you only have a window of time that is, you know, pretty finite to get your thoughts out, and your job is to basically explain precisely to the audience what you believe is going down here, and you know damn well that you can be double checked by anybody who's competent enough to run a solve, you don't just speak lightly on these things. So, you know, when the guy who's grinding fucking 1025 PLO in Poughkeepsie jumps in and goes, well, certainly you're not correct here. You don't really take that as a gentle jab, you know? It's like
I don't know that he came at him that way, right?
He
did. Yeah.
He didn't, but he did. When you're like in that moment and you're like you're explaining something to people, and then your co-host just says, you know, no, you're wrong. You're just like, wait, what the fuck did you just say?
Right. He didn't ask.
Yeah.
Right. He didn't ask, well, don't you believe Jax would three bet here? Right. He didn't pose a question for the audience.
That's the way I interpreted it.
Yeah.
Well, sure, but I mean, you know, you're giving him the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, I tend to do that.
Which is fine. I think Will probably deserves the benefit of the doubt because, again, like, he's new. I don't think he meant anything malicious by it. But it was very clear in that exchange that it's a misunderstanding of where one role begins and or where one role ends and another role begins.
It was a stay in your lane moment.
100%.
Yeah.
And, you know, Will be better for it, to be quite frank. So, like, you know, obviously this little clip that PokerOrg tweeted out is meant to kind of get the conversation flowing and make it seem like there's a little bit of trouble in paradise. But I suppose those guys hashed it out off air. They're probably totally fine. It's unfortunately a humbling moment for Will, but he's going to be around to do this. Like, he's good at the analysis part. Like, he keeps it light. He's able to find the bits of humor to insert himself. It's just a matter of removing, like, the hardest thing to do in that situation when you're brought in to be the, I don't want to say comic relief, but you're brought in to be the guy who speaks on behalf of the audience and is kind of the observer, if you will, right? The hardest thing for you to do is remove the poker player portion of your brain, right? And that's why I believe Henry is so fucking remarkable at this, because rather than fully remove the part of his brain that understands the game, he instead gets studied up to a point where he can ask very pointed questions and just not fucking miss, right? Mm-hmm. And then everything in between there is just like really sharp, witty banter. And yeah, it's just so good.
I think when you're in like Will's position, you almost have to become like the student, right? Because like, you know, when you have someone like Rass who's so studied and knows every spot, then you want to be like, you want to defer to him. You want to be like you said, ask the right questions and become like, oh, okay, so this is, he's going to make this play. He's going to three bet here because, and then like ask, why is he doing this and why is he doing that? Instead of, you know, be like, no, I think this is right.
Right. You know, the biggest thing is that you want to let the guy cook. Yeah. Right. And I think like, if I could offer any constructive criticism to Will, it's like, having watched for the last 2 weeks, he steps on his analyst a little bit, mm-hmm. right? Like, he's constantly trying to move it along, and it should be the opposite. The play-by-play guy is just there to be the John Stockton of it all.
Oh, yeah, I was gonna say Jason Williams.
Okay,
you just want to be white chocolate, you know?
That's
you
right,
just
man.
Want to throw over straight up.
That's right. You're just laying up dimes.
That's all you.
The thing
do.
Is though, with like after a few of these series, Will probably become a lot sharper, right? Mm. He's going to be watching the top of the top playing. He's going to be there commentating on, you know, on every stream, final tables, with somebody very, very smart, very, very studied in the booth with him. So, like, enough repetition, his game.
You still
will
have
elevate.
To have a lot of drive to study, because mm-hmm. these spots are just very non-intuitive.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I could watch Triton events all day long and I would pick up some stuff through osmosis, but without actually looking at ICM sims, mm-hmm. you're shooting from the hip. And a lot of the things that you're going to defer to are just going to be what you would do in a similar spot for chip EV. And it's just going to be wrong. And the thing is it's not like you can just say like, oh, well, I would do this for chip EV and that's probably wrong, so we should look at the opposite. It doesn't work that way either. You know what I mean? Like, you find these weird mixes and situations where like hands that you may not even VPIP for chips are suddenly just all in for ICM.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's complicated. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's just very clear that,
like, there's spots where like queen five offsuit is just a three bet in a certain spot. And you're like, wait, that it's in there? And like, yeah, if you look at the chart, like there's the queen five offsuit finds its way into a three bet in a certain situation.
Right. And it's like my chippy V brain already dismissed all of that because these hands just fall in the gray.
Yeah.
You know, like they're just not a part of strategy. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, it becomes, you have to be, unfortunately or fortunately, I guess, depends on like which way you want to look at it. If you want to be good at that level, right? Like, and that's the big thing, I think that's the biggest takeaway, is to recognize that Triton is that level. Triton is our version of the MLB, the majors, right? Like everything else by comparison is a bit of a lesser league, so to speak, right? Now, of course, like WBT Championship, WSOP Main Event, those are marquee events that are bigger deals, quite frankly, than any one Triton event or even any one Triton series. But they're bigger deals in the way that like the Super Bowl is a bigger deal than any one football mm-hmm. game throughout the year.
If you want to, anybody can go, you know, down to the Horseshoe Paris and find their way into a World Series event. Not very hard, right?
Right.
They have buy-ins from $300. Even the main event, like you could play satellite. I mean, not everybody's going to get it, but you know enough people, you can sell, you can win a satellite, yeah. You can get into it. It's not like everybody can just walk into a Triton event,
right.
100K buy-in,
right.
And just play. Right.
Or even the smallest one being 25K.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Like the smallest one's 25K. They have some 15,000 or whatever. I think maybe even some 10. But like, yeah, it's just different. It's different. They're always off in these exotic locations where you have to like fly in. I'm sure it's expensive, right? You do have to be, like you said, the top of the top.
Golf might be the best comparison.
Right.
Like, when you mm-hmm. listen to golf analysis and the play-by-play, the guys are just sharp, man. Like they're fucking golfers at their core.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not a fair weather fan. It's not somebody who just plays mini golf on the side. Like these guys, they've been to Pebble and they've at minimum walked the course, if not having played it a dozen times or so. Mm-hmm. You know, like they get it. They're at the level of caddy. And that's kind of, unfortunately, I'm not sure. It just depends on what angle you're coming from. But like that's the level of expectation when you're watching a Triton event. And I honestly think that's why we've seen a handful of analysts come and go.
Yeah, it's definitely a unique talent to be a top tier professional, but also to get on the mic and be able to convey that and do it in a way where people still understand and have a little bit of color as well.
Yeah.
I think is really tough. Tony Romo, I think, is a good example.
Great example. Perfect mm-hmm. example. Prior to Romo, you just didn't really see that in the NFL. Everything was about dumbing it down for the layperson.
Yeah. And I'm not even a big football guy, but I've seen him do his job where he's literally saying, okay, this is probably going to happen.
Right.
Sure as shit, it does.
Yeah. And those moments are so special, right? Like when you can just nail it like that to the audience, those moments are so special because it's like you're a magician. You know, it's like you know some sort of secret sauce that you're letting them in on for one brief moment in time.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, again, we all know that this is why Shulman and Ali are the fucking goat of this. But you can't sleep on Rast. Guy fucking knows his shit.
Yeah.
And that's so important to these situations. And honestly, like when, you know, it might have been a year and a half ago now, maybe 2 years ago, when I was being critical of all the stream games that have been coming out. And I said, like, look, nobody is investing in commentary. I still believe that to be true. And the reason why I believe that to be true is because not one of those fucking streams has a guy in the booth that is capable of playing even remotely close to winning poker at the stakes that are being televised. And that's problematic. The little bit of time that Christian got on the mic at Hustler, it's so far and away clear that he is head and shoulders above anybody else that gets on the mic.
Yeah.
Right? It's because if given the opportunity, he could walk in that room and play. Right? And not just play, but win.
Yeah, he's also great on the mic, though.
Yeah. Right, yeah, and, you know, he has a certain personality that shines
sure.
through. He's very good at reducing the commentary down for the everyman as well. But the most important aspect of it is being able to get the spots right and be able to actually call out what's happening in real time. And I do not think any of the live streams are doing this currently. I don't care if you're talking about Lodge, Bally's, Hustler, anything across the board. I think, like, for sure, they all have a totally different vision of what a color commentator is supposed to accomplish. And they could be right. I don't fucking know. My opinion, though, is the best version of any of these products is to let the players and the play speak for themselves from an entertainment standpoint. You don't need somebody on the mic to entertain, right? You need somebody on the mic to interject and just say, like, this is very interesting. And if you guys aren't paying close enough attention, you might miss it. But what's happening here is such and such, and, you know, this over here is a reaction to that. Now I anticipate we're going to see this happen on the next street, and then boom, it happens. It's like, oh, that's so cool. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, I just learned something.
Yeah.
You know, it's a really cool takeaway. But yeah, shout out to my man Dankness. He got a tough talk today by Rast. Rast responded with a very short novella.
That's a lot of words.
A lot of words. And very, very, it's a lot of words that are also to the point.
Very stern.
Which is kind of crazy. But yeah, I mean, it seems like he was pretty perturbed. He put up a screenshot of the solve, basically saying, like, nailed it, which, you know, hey, kudos to you, buddy.
Yeah.
Like, I got to tell you, you risked a lot. So had you missed that one, it wouldn't look good, but you fucking nailed it, cuz. Jack's pure flat.
You imagine if it's just a pure three bet.
Right.
Oh,
would have been brutal. But yeah, I mean, hopefully Will learns a little bit from this. Doesn't take it too much to heart. Obviously, we're not trying to meme on him or anything along those lines. All right, let's get to the larger conversation, and then if we have time, we will wrap it up with an In the Muck. So the big conversation we were gonna have yesterday, but, you know, Melissa was on, so we just talked about backyards and dogs all day, which is a welcomed relief, I think, from all the poker talk. But that just means we get it back ended to today, and now we got to do all the heavy lifting. There's a Reddit thread that said, I made the wrong move and I know it's wrong, but I do it anyway. And I like to reframe this as Broga gave in to the inner demon voice. You know, that little voice in the back of your head that when you're standing on a ledge just goes, jump. Jump.
Just do it.
See if you can fly. Just do it. Just fly. We all have that. And yeah. Conrad, you could probably speak to this more than the rest of us. That little voice in the back of your head that just says, punt. Just punt it off.
Just punt it off.
Just shove it all in. See what happens. It might work. I've succumbed to this a lot, and in very specific dynamics. So the snare that this Reddit thread is setting up was, I've been playing 1-3 for a year now and have sort of been on a downswing recently. I used to be a very patient type player, which led to success. Through a series of bad beats, aces versus kings, so yeah, you know, the usual shit. I started weird. You're playing super tight and patient, and then when your best hands start losing to best hands, you're not winning anymore. I wonder where your edge was coming from. This sounds all too familiar. It's funny too, because now it's like everything is obviously a mistake that's actually probably pretty fine. It's like, since then, I've started making stupid plays, just forcing bad moves. I've been way over bluffing, check raising when there's no need, triple barrel bluffing with ace king, stuff I never did. Obviously, the triple barrel is with ace king. It's never like I've six high.
No.
And no. It's like I played a three bet pot and I had the bottom of my range, which is obviously ace king. you know, so it's like, okay, these are the woes of playing small stakes. Like, tight is right is true for a reason. But you really never learn to play poker under that format, let's say. When you start to graduate to a more complete strategy where you actually will figure out what proper check raises are, what barrel frequencies are, you know, having a completed range, even if you're against people who are generally too tight, you'll understand what the true variance of this game actually looks like. You're going to lose a lot of fucking pots. You're not supposed to just get the showdown, and every time you bet, it's because you have the best hand, right? Like, that's not the way the game works. But what I really want to focus in on here is, even though I think he's wrong in the way that he's framing it, this notion of, like, pressing, right? Of forcing action in an environment where it's very unforgiving to that. It feels like a little bit self-sabotagey, and personally, you know, I know I was very, very, very prone to this when I was coming up through the 2-5, 5-10 stakes. If I had bad games where people were short stacking, people were just playing relatively nitty, I very much did as many things as possible to try to get them to gamble. And my thought process was, if I punt – they will in turn punt to try to catch me.
Mm-mm.
They don't.
Mm-mm.
They just don't.
No.
They're unwavering.
No, they're like, this guy, they're like, oh, look at this idiot. I'll just wait till I get aces and I'll get them.
You know what dawned on me, or when it dawned on me, was watching like a drunk guy come to the game and them just letting me play him heads up in a nine max game for hours because they're just patiently waiting to catch him.
Mm-hmm.
While he's just, you know, literally dusting it all off with no pairs, bottom pairs, you know, just seeing 80% of the flops and playing all the fucking hands and everything in between. It was just like, how are you guys not competing for this money right now? Mm-hmm. Hi, Pip. Hi, girl. Okay.
No, it'll be like someone will raise blind
right
under the gun and it'll fold to them.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell is happening?
I have a great example of this. Yeah. There was this man named Papa. That's all you need to know. He was a fucking,
Papa, don't preach.
He was a fucking legend. Rumor had it that he had gambled his way from like nothing to like tens of millions in the course of a few months in Macau. And the first thing he did was buy himself a Lamborghini. And then
that's the first thing you should do.
And then a ticket to the Wynn in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Okay.
So he shows up here and every day they had like 5-10 uncapped running at the Wynn. This is like 4 years ago or so. And they would have two tables going that they would turn into 1025 when they heard Papa was in town. So then, you know, Papa would basically walk in and he would pick which table he wanted to go to. And they would either play 1025 or 2550. But he would sit 100K deep and play every single fucking hand. The 100K was always getting dusted. It was literally his relaxation in between like playing, you know, 50K hands of Baccarat. Yeah. So he comes and somehow there's an open seat in both 1025 games and he sits in mine directly to my right. So I put the 50 on. I mean, this is a few hours in. I'm stuck like 30K. He has like 100-ish in front of him still. And it's all 5-10 players taking a shot and they're all playing so fucking tight, man. Like they're just letting me play this guy heads up basically. And I'm taking the worst of it, but who gives a shit? So this hand happens where I straddle under the gun and it fucking folds to Papa in the big blind. Can you imagine a world where this man has money invested? He has folded exactly zero hands all night. And the seven players to act before him just couldn't find a hand that they wanted to put any more money in the middle with.
Beautiful thing.
So Papa limps and I check. There's now $110 in the pot. We are $100,000 effective. What if I told you we played a 200K pot?
I believe you.
I would believe it.
Okay. I have 5-4 off, and the board comes 10-6-3 rainbow. He leads for like 100. I make it 400. He makes it 2,000. I call.
What is the board?
10-6-3? 10-6-3 rainbow.
Okay, so you're open-ended.
Yep. Turn, deuce.
It's a good card.
It's a good card.
Nice.
He bets 8,000.
Ooh.
Into like 4.
I make it 20,000. He calls. River.
Four pairs.
Nah.
No. Jack. River, queen. Mm. He checks.
You have the nuts.
I have the nuts. There's 45,000 in the middle. 44,000, something like that. I jam.
Yeah.
For like 2x pot.
Okay.
He snaps with 10-7 offsuit.
Ooh, nice. Love it. Love to see it.
And then leaves.
Thanks, Papa.
I got every penny Papa sat with while seven shit regs sat there and just watched it happen in a limped fucking pot.
With 5-4 off.
With 5-4 off.
That's beautiful.
And it's like, that's when I understood. These guys have no interest in trying to collect EV.
Mm-hmm.
They are just only interested in being gifted EV, right? Like, they don't want to work for it. They just want to be in the game and be handed some amount of free money, which is obviously happening when you have a huge loser in the game.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is the person who's willing to fight gets the lion's share far too often. And this is a huge, huge problem at low to mid stakes. Now, the issue on the contrary is whenever you're that reg at those low to mid stakes where you're accustomed to having a pretty big win rate by playing your game, yada, 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 and the cards start to break even for you, and you're in these nitty-ish games, you don't get to be the guy who plays the role of Papa.
Right.
Because they're just going to wait.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to steal a bunch of blinds, and then you're going to get fucked for hundreds of big blinds. So you need an alternative. Like, if you're skilled enough that you want to drive action, but you can't afford to because people are just too goddamn tight, you need to either add carnival games that will naturally drive the action yeah. and force them out of their comfort zone, or just play a different game. There's just no getting around it. Mm-hmm. The biggest mistake you can make is to open up your range in a tight game. Right?
Yeah. Remember I've tried this at the Jewel.
Yeah, I was going to say, we were sitting together, and it was like the tightest game ever. Grub was like, I'm just going to raise every hand. I'm just making $10 every hand. Then we get $10 on the flop every time. And
it did work until it didn't.
Right.
Right, exactly.
You win a bunch of small pots that are uncontested, but then you get absolutely obliterated when you finally have something of reasonable value versus the person who's been waiting to make a set all night.
Right. Yeah.
And then trap you with said set. Right? Like, that's the crazy thing. You almost have to play reverse poker, where it's like, when you have nothing, you just blast your face off.
Right.
But the second you flop top pair, you have to like turn it into a one street game where it's like, I'm going to fuck this guy for trying to trap me with a set, because if he doesn't have a set, he's not paying me anyway.
Right.
Yeah. Me having top pairs is irrelevant. I've been winning without a pair all night long.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
The second a bunch of money goes in and I have a pair, I'm fucked.
Yeah.
That's abundantly clear.
Yep.
You know? So I think, like, when we're talking about the top errors that tend to occur in the smallish stakes, particularly in like the capped games, it's trying to generate too much action in a game that's otherwise tight and straightforward. And then the secondary one is getting swept up. So it's when a guy like Papa sits down, it's when the drunk guy sits down, and then everybody who already wasn't tight to begin with mirrors his style of play. You can't be the one to try to out-gamble a table full of gamblers.
Right.
That's the time that you actually just get to sit on your heels and say, like, okay, this is the one time where I kind of get to be the person just collecting free EV. I get to be the one just waiting to make a really strong top pair and, like, bluff catch three. Or I get to be the one who knows I'm going to win a big pot if and when I finally flop a set. That type of stuff. And it's hard because those sets don't come all that often, you know? Mm-hmm. So when you're in that game where everybody's just putting in hundreds of big blinds with one pair over and over again, you want to get in the middle of it. You want to flop a draw and see if you can fucking gamble. But it's like the worst approach because you just torch. And most people can't handle the swings of it. It's one thing if like you're overrolled and you're willing to go 10 buy-ins deep in order to win two buy-ins ultimately, because you're gambling your face off with them.
Right.
Most people don't have that level of tolerance though.
Sound like Deeb.
Hmm. Deeb did, he went hard. I was just going to pass on this because I don't think it's really much of a story, but he bagged a $400 circuit event. Good for Deeb. literally couldn't care less. Where he re-entered 8 times. And Norman Chad, who's very anti-re-entry, had a little something to say about it. God damn it, Pip. You're ruining me here, kid. What are you doing? What are we doing?
Just being a puppy.
What are you going to do?
That frame is going down right now, I'm telling you.
Yeah. Pip does not like Chauncey.
Pip does not know what to do.
Goodbye, Chauncey. Come here, Pip. Are you going to... Oh. You scared. Okay, back to the lap we go. Now all of a sudden you're going to understand how good you had it. I think she's hot. Yeah, I don't really have any opinions on firing Max. Like, whatever, man. If Sean Deeb wants to get out there and torch 3,200...
Torch?
God bless him.
He just had a bag chip lead.
Who gives a shit?
You gotta do what you gotta do.
What happened to this Reddit post?
What do you mean?
Did you finish the what? Or is that what that was? What basically what the?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Because I didn't read the whole thing, so I didn't.
Wow.
There was more to it.
Basically, the top things not to do in a tight game is play.
Right.
Yeah.
And then we move on from there.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Definitely don't play. Start with that, and then
carnival games.
Yeah, working
if you
way
have
backwards.
To play.
Mm-hmm. God, I just realized this fucking mic's been in my shot the whole time. I can't believe I didn't notice that sooner. How tilting. All right, let's wrap this with a take a beat.
Let's take a beat.
All right. I want to take a beat and I want to say farewell to number 8. This is a very heartfelt and difficult farewell for me because nobody was a bigger Kenny apologist than me.
That should be good.
The lore of Kenny Pickett was a romanticized storyline that works particularly well in the Steel City. Yinzers aren't just diehards who bleed black and gold. We're also loyal to a fault when it comes to the belief that we are born and raised in the greatest city on the face of the earth. So when local athletes come into the spotlight with that blue-collar mentality and the grit necessary to thrive under the weight of decades of excellence, Yinzers take notice. And not in a skeptical way, but in a proud papa watching their son lead their team to victory under Friday night lights of a brisk Western PA night. Those Pittsburgh dads, they couldn't be more happy whenever they see their kid leading the team down the field. As Big Ben, an Ohio native who quickly became the adopted son of Yinzers everywhere, faded into the sunset, a sense of the team's identity went with him. The Steelers, dating back to the great teams of the 70s, have always been smash-mouth, dominant, win-ugly forces of nature in the NFL. For the years in the 90s, we desperately searched for a quarterback who reflected that identity. Neil O'Donnell was too soft. He was just too Jersey. But got us as close to the finish line as possible without crossing it, only to be booed out of city, booed out of Pittsburgh, back into the armpit of America, aka the Jets. From there, it was years of Slash, who was way ahead of his time, but also a far superior wide receiver than he was quarterback, and then a half a dozen reincarnations of Bubby Brister. Everyone from Mike Tomczak to Tommy Gunn Maddox, they were all just terrible pocket passers who never moved, and eventually became Mason Rudolph, almost getting decapitated by one Fontez. Was it Fontez? No.
Miles Garrett.
Right. Fucking Miles Garrett. Finally, we had our guy, though, in Big Ben. A nickname so perfect for his style of play and what he'd be asked to do in leading this team. The man was pure grit. So imagine the joy when we heard about a local Pitt star who in his fifth year was vying for the Heisman. The more they condemned him for his happy feet and small hands, the more Yinzers heard local legend overcomes adversary to become its standout. Could small hands Kenny be the heir to the throne and lead us back to the promised land? Could Pickett to Pickens be the level of excellence we saw with the Killer Bees in Ben and AB? Sadly, today we learned exactly what the makeup of Kenny's character was. He's not the ice-cold rookie with near-perfect passer rating when the game is on the line in the fourth, but instead he's a soft-coddled, mid-tier talent that didn't have the guts to go nose-to-nose with an aging vet who was brought in as much as a rental mentor as he was to be a viable option at quarterback. Now Kenny gets to truly go home, to the city he grew up rooting for. The city across the state that every Yinzer has grown to loathe anytime the debate between Sheets and Wawa comes up. And sadly, he won't even have the opportunity to compete. The Steelers are a no-nonsense franchise that reflect their fan base arguably more than any other in professional sports. And like a tough Pittsburgh dad, the brass was not about to deal with a whiny third-year player upset about playing time. Instead, they moved him in exchange for a bag of balls to an impossible situation where, unlike here, he'll have absolutely no shot at beating out the current number one option in Jalen Hurts. There's a lesson to be learned here, kids. Be careful what you complain for. That's going to do it for us. Real quick reminder that we are on the final episode of Season 10 of Poker Out Loud. We have a bit of a preview of me putting young Josh in the fucking cage.
$1,200.
We are going to jam.
Players all in.
Oh boy. Okay. So. Now my. So. Jeez. Matthew. Just because I don't think he would. I hate folding to Berkey. We're just so high up here, and I know he's creative enough.
Call.
Wow.
Nice call.
I was in the pain chamber.
I didn't know what it's me
happening. Romana, give me more money.
All right, if you want to see that hand in full and the entire 8.5 minute tank, I'm just kidding, we edited it down. be sure to head to sulfurwide.io, check out all 10 seasons of Poker Out Loud. Also, don't forget that we have two academies coming up in May. May 23rd to the 25th is the Cash Academy. May 28th to the 30th, 27th to the 30th, 28th to the 30th is the MTT Academy.
27th to the 30th is the MTT Academy.
That was close enough. Be sure to head to academy.sulfurwide.io if you need more information on those, or hit hashtag Academy in the chat. We'll be back Monday with another In the Muck, as well as Landon Tice is going to be joining us again. We'll be back at noon Pacific Monday. Don't forget to tune in. We'll have Pip the Pod Dog on there. Say bye, Pip. Bye.
Peace.